So we'll go ahead and get started with our first presenter today, which is going to be Luke, and I will let him pronounce his last name. But Luke earned his MPH in epidemiology from the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University in May of this year. Congratulations. That's a great accomplishment. He's currently working as an epidemiologist in asthma control and injury prevention for the Montana Department of Public Health. So we'll welcome Luke as he presents on upward or downward mobility.
All right. So I'm going to discuss the association between living in a deprived neighborhood and risk for preterm birth. As you've probably seen in the literature, there's been many studies examining the association dating all the way back to Alfred Yankauer's 1950 study of the association of residential segregation and infant mortality in New York. In more recent years, there's been a sharp growth in infant mortality. There's been a sharp growth in neighborhood effects studies, in part due to advances in statistical methods and computational capacities. However, the vast majority of these studies have relied on a design and analytic method that has significant barriers to causal inference that have been recognized and discussed in the literature. In light of this, we used a new design to assess the evidence for or against the causal association by taking a residential mobility-based approach. We examined preterm birth risk in association with change in neighborhood deprivation exposure within clusters of individuals who share a baseline neighborhood. So nothing to disclose. So to demonstrate the need for and strengths of the new design, we can start from the beginning. These two maps show the 10-county Atlanta, Georgia metropolitan area. And on the left, we have quintiles of neighborhood deprivation, and on the right, quintiles of preterm birth rates by census tract. Clearly, they show a similar pattern with overlap of high deprivation with high preterm birth rates. And we can quantify this association, examining the preterm birth rate in each quintile of deprivation. As you can see, there's significant differences between deprivation quintiles and some evidence of an increasing rate with increasing deprivation at the neighborhood level. However, we'd like to examine the causal association, implying that our conclusions must reach the individual level, which we can't do with a purely ecological association. So how do we assess the association between living in a deprived neighborhood and individual preterm birth risk? Well, the direction the field's taken has been to use hierarchical or multi-level regression applied to neighborhood deprivation and birth outcome measured at a single time point. Typically, the strategy is to contrast preterm birth outcomes between individuals living in high deprivation neighborhoods and those in low deprivation neighborhoods while accounting for individual level differences between these people. These studies have fairly consistently found small but significant associations between various measures of neighborhood deprivation and poor birth outcomes. Of the 11 studies that we reviewed for this project, odds ratios comparing the most deprived neighborhoods to the least deprived neighborhoods ranged roughly from 1.1 to 1.7. One of the barriers to causal inference that has been identified and discussed is the high potential for confounding bias, which can be demonstrated by examining the directed acyclic diagram, or DAG, and counterfactual assumptions of the design. The neighborhood a person lives in is not random, of course, and is influenced by a multitude of factors, often including socioeconomic status and race. These influencing factors, termed selection factors, can compound the association of neighborhood deprivation and preterm birth if they both lead a person to live in a deprived neighborhood and are associated with preterm birth risk through pathways not mediated by neighborhood deprivation. Types of confounding that particularly plague this design. Confounding is a problem for all observational studies, but particular to this design, we have four main types. The first is measured controlled confounding, which isn't a problem. Secondly, we have residual confounding, which occurs when a confounding factor is crudely measured, such as using education as a measure for socioeconomic status. And due to the limited socioeconomic information on birth records, it's often a residual confounder in studies reliant on individual information from birth records. Next, there's unmeasured confounding, which is a problem in most observational studies, but it's particularly problematic in these studies due to lack of research on selection factors and lack of measurement of selection factors in population health data sets. Finally, and perhaps the strongest barrier to causal inference, is structural confounding, which occurs when there's not substantial overlap in individual level characteristics between neighborhoods and is particularly prevalent when contrasting extremes such as the most deprived and least deprived neighborhoods. So even if measured, structural components cannot be controlled for because statistical control relies on comparing individuals with the same individual characteristics between neighborhood types. And socioeconomic status and race are common potential structural confounders. So our design can be best demonstrated by examining a simplified DAIG and counterfactual assumption. Starting with the DAIG, the previously discussed study design, we see there is confounding by the factors that select individuals into certain neighborhood types. However, if we measure neighborhood at two time points, we see there's some of the influence of selection factors on the second neighborhood operate through the first neighborhood. And if we control for the second neighborhood, or if we control for the first time point or baseline neighborhood, we can indirectly control for some of the confounding by selection factors. If we draw comparisons only between individuals who share a baseline neighborhood, the potential for confounding bias is then substantially reduced. So the problem with the single time point design can be further demonstrated by examining the counterfactual assumption. It's assumed that birth outcomes of individuals living in non-deprived neighborhoods represent the outcomes that would have occurred among individuals living in deprived neighborhoods had they alternatively lived in non-deprived neighborhoods. Essentially, it's assuming exchangeability between individuals living in very different neighborhood types, which requires similarity in individual characteristics between these groups. By examining residential mobility trajectories rather than viewing individuals in static neighborhoods, we can use a more realistic counterfactual assumption. Here we assume that the birth outcomes among those who stay in the same neighborhood between baseline and follow-up represent the outcomes that would have occurred among these, or among those who moved to more or less deprived neighborhoods had they alternatively remained in the same baseline neighborhood. In other words, we assume individuals who move out of a neighborhood are exchangeable with those who remain in the same neighborhood, which is a more plausible assumption than that in the single time point design. Our comparisons are then between individuals who are more likely to have similar selection factors than in the previous design. With that as some motivation, we'll get into the meat of our study. This was a secondary analysis of a data set consisting of maternally linked geocoded birth records for all births in Georgia from 1994 through 2007. We restricted to births occurring in the 10 county Atlanta metropolitan area, and then selected the first two birth records in the time period for each mother, excluding mothers with only one birth record, and hence only one data point, which then resulted in the final cohort of 170,800 some women with two birth records each and two geocoded residences each. The first birth was considered baseline and the second follow-up. The outcome was then preterm birth at the follow-up birth. The geocoding of residential address on each birth record was used to link data sets to U.S. Census geography and data. From this, we used the Neighborhood Deprivation Index developed by Lynn Messer and linear interpolation between census years to estimate a year-specific estimate of neighborhood deprivation. This resulted in clustering mothers within 564 baseline census tracts with an average of 304 individuals per tract, adequate for within-neighborhood comparisons, given that an average of 53% of women per tract move between births. From here, we defined exposures through a matrix of residential mobility and change in deprivation. Change in deprivation was assessed by the difference between NDI, Neighborhood Deprivation Index, at baseline and at follow-up, and residential mobility was assessed by a change in census tract between baseline and follow-up. Residential mobility trajectories were defined as either unexposed stayers who didn't change census tracts between births and exposed movers. Categories of exposure were based on quintiles of change in deprivation. Those with the greatest decrease in deprivation were in the bottom quintile in terms of have high upward mobility, while those in the top quintile with the greatest increase in deprivation were termed to have high downward mobility. The outcome preterm birth is defined as birth prior to 37 completed weeks gestation as reported on the birth record. So our hypothesis was then that those with upward mobility would have a lower risk of preterm birth relative to stayers, and those with downward mobility would have a greater risk. And those who moved laterally without change in deprivation were expected to have no difference in preterm birth relative to stayers. So the analysis was then a fixed intercept multi-level logistic regression, drawing comparisons between exposure trajectories and stairs within each baseline neighborhood. The statistical model can be stated as shown there by including an intercept estimate for each tract or coefficients for each exposure trajectory of the average within tract association across all tracts. A primary difference between this model and that of a single time point design is that our exposures are at the individual or within neighborhood level rather than between neighborhoods. Moving into results, the crude model showed significant odds ratios in the expected directions for the high mobility trajectory. High upward mobility was associated with a 16% decrease in odds of preterm birth relative to stairs, while high downward mobility was associated with a 22% increase in odds. But this association, of course, could be due to other differences between movers and stayers that are associated with preterm birth risk. So before assessing confounders, we examined the potential for interaction between each of our covariates, which all came from the birth records, and the mobility trajectories. Significant interactions were identified between the trajectories and maternal age, preterm birth at baseline, as well as the length of the interbirth interval or the time between births. From here, we used a backward elimination strategy to assess potential confounders, and through this, we identified the final model that is sufficiently controlled for measured confounding through including the interaction terms, their lower order components, maternal race, and education. Other examined covariates included baseline Medicaid payment for expenses, marital status, prenatal care adequacy, and alcohol and tobacco use during pregnancy, which all dropped out of the model during the model building process. In this adjusted model, we found our exposure odds ratio to be shifted towards the null, but retained statistical significance. At the median value of all interaction terms, high upward mobility was associated with still a 7% decrease in preterm birth odds relative to stayers, while high downward mobility was associated with a 15% increase. The intermediate trajectories were not significantly associated with preterm birth, but their point estimates were in the expected directions. And then the lateral mobility trajectory was centered nicely on the null, as we expected. So the general conclusions that can be drawn from our study are that, averaged across all baseline neighborhoods, those who move to a less deprived neighborhood experience a small decrease in preterm birth risk, while those moving to a more deprived neighborhood experience a small increase. This is not the same measure as that made in single time point designs, but it's indirectly comparable. So if living in a deprived neighborhood is associated with increased preterm birth risk, as the single time point design suggests, then moving to a more deprived neighborhood is expected to be associated with an increase in preterm birth risk, and our study's conclusions support that hypothesis. However, even though our design controls for some of the confounding that can bias the single time point designs, it's not free of confounding and other potential biases. Our modeling process did reveal some factors as confounders, which were controlled for in the final model. But confounders such as maternal education suggest that broader SES is a likely partially controlled confounder. In addition to confounding arising from time invariant differences between movers and stayers, we also have potential confounding by factors that change between baseline and follow-up. For example, if a woman has an increase in income between baseline and follow-up, that could both cause upward mobility and potentially decrease in preterm birth risk, independent from moving to a less deprived neighborhood. This remaining potential for unmeasured and residual confounding seems to me to be the largest limitation, but other limitations include the indirect measurement of mobility and neighborhoods lived in prior to baseline and are not taken into account. Other limitations that are more general to neighborhood effects studies include the use of census tract boundaries to approximate neighborhoods and failure to acknowledge spatial arrangement of neighborhoods and their interdependence. Despite these limitations, our study does have substantial strengths over the single time point design of most previous studies. Primarily by drawing comparisons within baseline neighborhoods, we control for much of the confounding due to selection factors that differ between individuals living in different neighborhood types. Other strengths include a more realistic counterfactual assumption, progress towards examining the timing and dose of exposure to neighborhood deprivation, and examining exposures that could potentially be randomized in an experimental framework. To summarize, the key points of a study are then that selection factors confound the direct association between neighborhood characteristics and health outcomes. The standard single time point design used to assess associations between neighborhood effects and health outcomes do not adequately control for the this confounding with likely unmeasured residual and structural confounding, and a residential mobility-based approach with two time points can't control for much of this confounding while indirectly assessing the impact of neighborhood factors on individual outcomes. And future studies of this type should be attempted wherever neighborhood factors have been associated with health outcomes in single time point designs, and the strength of these studies could be maximized by better measurement of mobility timing of change in SES, as well as better understanding and measurement of the factors that contribute to upward and downward mobility. And that got a few references if you want to take a look and contact information.
So we actually do have a couple of minutes for questions if anyone has any questions.
Income wasn't reported on the birth records. We would have definitely liked to, and then we could have had an SES measure that we could see a change in between time points, but with education, you know, it's pretty constant.
What are some of the reasons for the change in the birth risk moving from a more or less depraved community?
So the general mechanism that seems to be in the literature anyways, the stress-related cumulative stress kind of hypothesis, where living in a more deprived neighborhood, you're more exposed to daily stressors, and then that leads to increased cortisol levels, which are then associated with preterm birth risk. So whether or not that cumulative risk can be reduced by moving out of a neighborhood is unknown, and then exactly how long a person has to live in a deprived neighborhood for those cumulative stressors to have an effect is also relatively unknown. Right.
Weathering.
Yeah, the weathering hypothesis has been, Dr. Kramer examined that in a little more detail with this same data set.
Okay.